you got cooking? How about cooking something up with me?
Let's stir it up, boys.
Welcome to the Outdoor Cooking Show, a weekly excursion into the fine art of preparing the world's most popular recipes under an open sky and an open flame. This edition of the Outdoor Cooking Show is brought to you by Boyd's One Stop, located at the Texas City Dyke. Now, here's your host, the old grill sergeant, Randy Hayes.
If the only thing you're using your spatula for is to scratch that spot on your back that you can't reach with your bare hand, it's time for you to turn up the radio. Check out the latest edition of The Grill Whisperer. No. That would not be me. But who knows? We might have an interview with one. You never know. No, I'm the kind of guy who finds a brand new grill on the patio in the backyard and then says to his wife, "Gee, honey, look what followed me home from the store. Can I keep it?" I believe in that old saying, you are what you eat. And if that's true, then I'm fast, cheap, and easy. Because let's face it, there's nothing faster, cheaper, or easier than grilling large chunks of meat in the backyard. So time's a-wastin', as Grandpa used to say. Heck, now I'm a grandparent, and I firmly believe in the power of charcoal.
So let's get to setting something on fire and burn it till the juices start to run out of it, Cletus.
Last week's edition of the Outdoor Cooking Show was an absolute hoot. We talked to Fadi Damasi of Fadi's Mediterranean Grill. And let me emphasize something right here, something that a couple of people asked me about after that interview. The Damasi family sold their interest in Damasi's several years ago, so they don't have anything to do with the Damasi's Mediterranean buffet restaurant you see all over town. They're even in Austin now. I think they have, what, 7 locations? But the Damasi family is no longer involved in that operation. Fadi's Mediterranean Grill is the Damasi's family concern now, so don't get confused. Then we also spoke to Zubair Dundar of Istanbul Grill and Deli and Patricia Vassos Pandizopoulos of Anonymous Cafe. So we got some really great insights into the techniques that the Lebanese and the Turks and the Greeks use to cook all those dishes that fall into that category known as the Mediterranean diet. And in the process, I think we learned why nutritionists believe that the Mediterranean diet is so healthy. It relies on several different things. First, and most importantly, extra virgin olive oil. Then also, it relies on made fresh daily sauces and ingredients. They never have preservatives. And, of course, lots of lean meat and grilled veggies. Now, that's not to say that other diets don't include some of those same elements, but it's the Mediterranean diet that uses those kinds of things almost exclusively. And that seems to be the secret to its success in keeping people's weight down, you know. And, of course, you can still get fat on a strictly Mediterranean diet if you eat too much of it, duh. But there are fewer fatty substances in the food and in the preparation of the food. Yes, there are fried foods and rich desserts in the Mediterranean diet. But if you stick to the more traditional ways of the way the Lebanese and the Turks and the Greeks prepare their dishes, you're going to wind up eating healthier and, by extension, lower calorie foods. It was all very educational, at least it was for me, and it was a lot of fun, too. So we're going to feature Fadi, Zubair, and Patricia on the show again soon to talk about more techniques and recipes. We got a couple of questions from you about it. Here's one now. The chefs you interviewed had such thick accents, I couldn't understand what they were saying. Okay, fair enough. But let me ask you a question. How's your Lebanese? Yeah, mine's pretty rusty, too. Look, I don't mean to be a jackwagon about it, but I have to admit, I admire anybody who can speak 2 languages. And if some people couldn't figure out exactly what one of our guest chefs said, just go to our website, theoutdoorcookingshow.com. You can listen to the podcast as many times as you like for free. Yeah, I had to listen a couple of times, get it right too. But in the end, it was worth it because the tips and the tricks that they had were really good. And on top of that, when I asked Fadi Demasi what inspired him to open a restaurant when he came to America, he said, the American dream. Now, how can you not love a guy like that, for crying out loud? Okay, here's another one. Your guest never really explained the difference between a kebab and a shish kebab. You know, I listened back to that interview, and you're right. So I just looked it up. Here it is. Kebabs were originally designed to utilize leftover parts of a butchered animal to avoid wasting the meat, especially in the Mediterranean region where meat products were scarce and valuable. Shish kebabs are a little harder to pin down. Sometimes shish kebabs referred to kebabs without vegetables. But even that seems to be in some dispute, so I'm just not sure. In any case, the word shish probably comes from the Levant, or what we would identify as the countries that comprise the eastern coastline of the Mediterranean Sea. You know, Cyprus, Israel, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, Turkey, Egypt, even Palestine and Iraq, though they're not actually on the coast. And shish is the word for skewer, or the stick on which the meat is grilled. But grilling seems to be kind of the common thread throughout all those different cultures and the way they all make kebabs. And that makes them the perfect subject matter for the Outdoor Cooking Show, eh? It was all great fun, learning new stuff from our guests. And I especially enjoyed hearing about gyros and shawarmas, which are really nothing more than sandwiches made from the meat of the kebab. I mean, what could be more American than sandwiches? In the final analysis, America has always been a melting pot of cultures and foods, so just about anything is fair game in this great country of ours, and that makes our food selections the best in the entire world, in my opinion. What could possibly be better than blending together all those different foods and spices and cooking techniques and tastes and make it into this big mishmash of cuisines that appeal to virtually everyone? I know you might be a little tired of us talking about diversity from the last few weeks, but it has become a hallmark of our city, and it's become a hallmark of our international reputation. We have become a destination for fine dining and world-class restaurants, and that's something to be proud of. So we're going to continue to toot our own horn about it, and if that upsets some people's overly delicate sensitivities along the way, well, too bad. Here's one more. Randy, I enjoy the interviews with chefs and professional cookers, but you said you were going to feature more backyard chefs, and you really haven't done that yet. Yep, you are exactly right. We've been so wrapped up in crawfish for the last couple of weeks, and then a couple of more weeks with international cuisine, I just let it slip my mind, to be perfectly candid. So I'm going to do something about that this week. I think it's vitally important to give a voice to people who don't necessarily cook for a living, but still love to do it for the pure fun of it. As a matter of fact, I talked to a guy at my grandson's Little League game just this past week, and he's exactly the kind of backyard chef who really relishes trying new things. He was telling me all about how he concocted his own hot sauce, you know, like Louisiana hot sauce. Said it took him several hours to put together, but he also said it was better than anything he'd ever bought in the store. So I turned to his wife and I said, "So what do you and the kids think of it?" She said, "Oh, it's way too hot for us." So I looked back over at him and I said, "Then I would probably love it. Samples or it never happened." So this week, we're going to try to take diversity to a whole new level. We're actually going to diversify diversity. Yes, we are going to be talking to one of the most successful international restaurateurs in the world, and he will no doubt have a lot to share with us about his eateries, and they're located all over the planet. However, in our quest to diversify diversity, We're also going to talk to a couple of genuine backyard chefs, both of whom I've known personally for decades now. And we're going to get their ideas and methods for everything from smoking a brisket to canning fresh vegetables. And not just what tastes good, but also what looks good. So, it's experts, amateurs, and celebrities today, which means I bet you recognize at least one of their names.
If your barbecue has gone up in smoke and your cooking reputation is at stake, stick around. The Old Grill Sergeant will be right back with more ideas and advice to make your next cookout sizzle.
Boyd's One Stop. The name says it all. If you like seafood, you'll love Boyd's, conveniently located at the base of the Texas City Dyke. Boyd's One Stop has bait, tackle, fresh seafood, and even a restaurant, all at 227 Dyke Road. If you fish Galveston Bay, Boyd's is the one and only stop for everything you need. There's a reason why they're called the live shrimp capital of Texas. But they've also got lots of finger mullet, croaker, plus fresh dead shrimp, shad, and squid. Plus, Boyd's has tackle galore, ice and ice chests, and cold drinks and snacks. Just need fresh fish for a family seafood feast? The freshest seafood, like table shrimp, live blue crab, and crawfish when in season, is in stock and ready for you at Boyd's. And if you're hungry right now, check out Boyd's Cajun Grill Express right next door, with a wide variety of breakfast, lunch, and dinner items like crawfish, oyster po'boys, and fried seafood platters. Boyd's One Stop, the name says it all, 227 Dyke Road at the base of the Texas City Dyke. Randy Hames here, and my salsa has to pass the chip test. That's why I personally recommend Jake's Atomic Salsa. Jake Johnson isn't your typical middle school student. He's picky about salsa, too, so he developed his own. And it was so good, his friends asked him to sell them some, and Jake's Atomic Salsa was born. Jake's Atomic Salsa has a hearty blend of tomatoes, plus roasted poblano, serrano, jalapeno, and habanero peppers. It also includes lots of fresh lemon and lime juice to add bright notes, with no large chunks of onion or cilantro. Jake's Atomic Salsa comes in four different flavors, from mild to out-of-this-world spicy, and goes great with eggs, enchiladas, meatloaf, Bloody Marys, or just pour it over cream cheese. It's the best salsa you've ever tasted, and all the profits go to pay for Jake's college education. Check out Jake's Atomic Salsa on Facebook, and go to jakesatomicsalsa.com to order a few jars, or try the variety pack with all four flavors. I know, you'll agree with me, Jake's Atomic Salsa is the bomb. Creekstone Outdoor Living. The name says it all. If you like being outdoors in your own space, you'll love Creekstone Outdoor Living. Located on the north side of Houston, Creekstone Outdoor Living has grills, lighting, appliances, pizza ovens, furniture, and even a design studio at 3555 Rayford Road, Suite 60 in Spring, Texas, just off the Grand Parkway. If you love your backyard, Creekstone Outdoor Living has everything you need. There's a reason why they're called the Backyard Paradise Specialists. They also carry the quality brands you love, like Yeti, RCX, Lynx, Fire Magic, Weber, American Muscle Grill, The Big Green Egg, Coppersmith, and many more. Just looking for some storage for the game or fishing? No problem. The Yeti Tundra Coolers are perfect for the job and come in sizes weighing up to 90 pounds. And if you're looking for some great design ideas, inspiration, or even some of their work, visit their website at www.creekstoneoutdoors.com. Creekstone Outdoor Living, the Backyard Paradise Specialists, 3555 Rayford Road, Suite 60, Spring, Texas, 713-389-5936. Hi, it's Randy Hames again. Everybody needs a new video, or a new website, or help in managing their social media. And my company, Edgewater Multimedia, can help. We help small businesses navigate the intimidating world of cyber advertising. You've got a business to run, and you don't have time to build and maintain your own website all by yourself, and you certainly don't have time to generate content for it. And when's the last time you had an extra hour or two to post something on your company's Facebook or Twitter accounts? Huh, like never, right? Well, at Edgewater Multimedia, that's what we do. We have a web designer on staff who has built some of the most eye-catching websites you've ever seen. And Edgewater features a photographer and videographer who can capture beautiful images to enhance the content on your website, not to mention social media. We can even manage your Facebook and Twitter accounts for you. Call us today, 832-500-4272, or see our website, edgewatermultimedia.com.
Life is simple. Eat, sleep, grill. The Outdoor Cooking Show is brought to you by Froberg's Farm on Highway 6 in Alvin. Now, here's the Grill Father, Randy Hayes.
We are very happy indeed to have Richard Sandoval on the show now. Richard is one of the most successful international restaurateurs in the world. Richard, we are honored that you agreed to appear on our show. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Now, before we dive into your culinary career, we could not help but notice on your bio that you have toured the world as a professional tennis player. How did that happen?
Yeah, correct. You know, my first love was tennis. I grew up in Mexico, started playing tennis when I was 9 years old, and then went and tested, my luck on the, satellite circuits. Yeah, so traveled throughout Europe, Asia, playing the satellite circuit. And at one point when, I wasn't breaking the top 200, I realized I was going to have to go to my second love, which was food. So I decided to enroll in culinary school, and then, the rest is history.
Where were you formally trained?
I went to CIA, Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, went back to Mexico and worked with my father. He was in the restaurant industry, opened a couple of restaurants for him. And then, again, I decided to go on my own and move to New York probably about 30 years ago. And that's where I started my first restaurant.
And it's apparent that you started to expand your restaurant footprint almost immediately. How did that manifest itself?
Yeah, I opened Savan, my first restaurant in New York. It was very, very successful in the Upper West Side. And then I went on to, do the food for my country, which was Mexican, which was always my goal. But I wanted to learn first kind of how Manhattan worked, being the most competitive food city in the world, I think. I started with a smaller kind of French-American bistro, which was Savan. Then I, went into Maya, and, Maya was, the first Mexican restaurant to get, 2 stars by the New York Times. And then it was a domino effect. People enjoyed what I was doing, embraced it. And, there was never a plan that I said, I want to own 45 restaurants. That was never part of my my strategy, but it just seemed to happen. People loved what I did. It kind of just took a life of its own, and then just started, building and opening more restaurants, and then started to go overseas, started to doing, restaurants in hotels. And again, that's kind of how it all started.
And now they're in Arizona and California and Colorado and New York and Virginia and Mexico and Tokyo and Hong Kong and Serbia and Dubai. My goodness, how do you keep up with all those locations? Do you visit them on a regular basis?
I try to. I typically travel probably around 300,000 miles a year.
Wow.
Yes, that's exactly. Wow. And yeah, so I visit them, at least once or twice a year. I like to be in contact with my restaurants. Like I say, I'm a control freak, so I have to be there when they change menus. And yeah, so I do visit all of them, a couple times a year.
And we hear you're expanding your footprint into Texas, specifically Houston. Tell us all about it.
Correct. Well, yeah, right before the Super Bowl, we, went into the iconic Four Seasons Hotel. We opened, they did a multi-million dollar renovation. So we created, Bayou and Bottle. It's kind of a bar, with American kind of regional, seasonal, food. Our beverage program is, based around a bourbon-centric beverage program. And, it opened right before the Super Bowl. And, we like to say it's kind of like the living room of downtown.
Ah.
I think downtown is really evolving, over the last 5 years of what's happening here. And so we'd like, to invite people to come here after whatever they're doing in downtown, whether it's, visiting the park or going to a ball game, come pay us a visit.
And obviously the whole phenomenon of single batch bourbon is really exploding. Explain the idea of handcrafted bourbon and why the popularity is growing.
Well, I think today, restaurant scenes have evolved tremendously. I think, a lot of it was always about wine and a chef. And today, mixologists are, just as popular almost as chefs. And I think restaurants today, to be successful, it's more about a lifestyle. It's not just about the food anymore. You want to have a mixologist. People want to understand more about, cocktails. People come to have drinks, to socialize, to eat great food. So we decided to do a program, based around bourbon with, handcrafted cocktails. And it's working. And I think people are, enjoying that. I personally believe that, you know, last 10 years, you know, everything moved, you know, too fast forward. I think we kind of had to rewind and, you know, go back to some basics, you know, home cooking, you know, classic cocktails. And so that's how we came up with, you know, with our, you know, with our beverage program.
Bayou and Bottle,
yes,
obviously. Now, let's talk about food that goes well with handcrafted bourbon. Right. And this is the Outdoor Cooking Show. So let's try to concentrate on dishes we can cook over an open flame, like roasted oysters. How do you prepare them, Richard?
You know, there's two ways. I mean, you can shuck them and then, you know, and finish them, you know, on top of the grill, you know, with the juices and, you know, and the heat, you know, it'll start to kind of braise the oyster. The other way is to just throw them on the grill, and then you'll naturally, you know, through the steam process, they'll crack open. And typically what I like, one of my favorite ways to do them is I get a little roasted tomatillo with a little vinegar. I make a little like tomatillo salsa and just drizzle that on top. And, you know, going into summer right now, I mean, what could be better than grilled oysters and a nice bourbon or a nice beer?
And you serve those roasted oysters with charred green tomatoes. Wow, that sounds great. How do you make those?
Again, you just throw them in the grill, take them out. You know, you chop them up, maybe a little bit of onion, garlic, a little lime juice, or a little yuzu, and then just, you know, top that with a little bit of that. And you don't want to do too much because, again, I think the beautiful thing about oysters is to get that the natural brine that has in them, that really nice like sea flavor. So you don't want to, you know, overpower that. So, again, you just want to, you know, do a little drop on the top just to accent the oysters. You know, you don't want it to be green tomatillos with oysters. You want grilled oysters with a little tomatillo on top.
And since we love beef on this show, the Outdoor Cooking Show, we were immediately drawn to your B&B burger. Tell us exactly how you make it and start with how you build the patty. Ingredients and all.
Right. So we, you know, we in-house grind, you know, the beef typically for 30-70, you know, fat to protein. We grind it in-house. And then what we like to do here is instead of making your, you know, typical one patty, we like to make two thinner patties.
Ah.
And then we know we make a nice remoulade.
Yeah.
You know, some American cheese and then some pickles. I mean, it's pretty much a classic burger. You know, I like the remoulade to give it a little bit of creaminess. And, you know, some people like mayonnaise. I like, you know, I like a nice remoulade, you know, to give it some nice acidity. You know, we don't grill it. We sear it. So the juices kind of stay within the burger. And I think that's what makes it great.
And from looking at your bio, it's obvious that when you're not cooking, you're equally passionate about training chefs of the future. So tell us about that.
Yeah, well, you know, I think, you know, part of your legacy, you know, when it's all said and done, I mean, you know, you want people in the industry that kind of represent, you know, what you did. And I guess what makes me, you know, the proudest is, you know, to see people that have worked for me that have become successful. You know, I think that's a sign that you did things well, that you trained people correctly and they worked with you and then they went on their own to be successful. But also, you know, within my own restaurants, it's also important to, you know, to be able to get, you know, these raw talent, whether it's, you know, people that come in as dishwashers or they come in and, you know, in your cold station, and see them move up, see evolve. You know, you normally typically can see that when you're in the kitchen, you know, who has that passion, who has a talent. You know, unfortunately today, you know, I always like to say, you know, TV kind of, you know, these TV chef shows, kind of was like a double-edged sword. You know, obviously it made our industry and our world tremendously and much bigger, but it also kind of hindered us a little bit is that, you know, some of today's, you know, chefs, I mean, they just want to get into cooking to be celebrities. And we all know, like, I mean, like, you know, the NFL, you know, the NBA, I mean, you know, one in a, you know, hundreds of thousands really make it to be a celebrity chef. So what's happening is we're getting these chefs today that are not really passionate about learning in the food, but just wanting to be celebrity. So I'm a little kind of,
skeptical?
Yeah, skeptical and conflict with that. So that's why more than ever, I'm trying to, you know, kind of, you know, cultivate their own talent within our company, within our restaurants, and have these people that start at the bottom and are slowly moving up, and I can instill the passion that I have into them, and then, you know, see them grow and evolve. I mean, I have a lot of chefs today that, you know, 10 years ago where, like I said, you know, we're making salads, or they were making, you know, sauces, or they were even dishwashers, and today they're, you know, they're running restaurants. So yeah, you know, part of what I'd love to do is kind of, you know, create this new, you know, new generation of chefs, and kind of, you know, teach them what I've learned and my experience, and hopefully, you know, they can do what I do, you know, one day.
We've been very fortunate to have the internationally renowned chef and award-winning restaurateur Richard Sandoval, who's opening a new restaurant here in Houston in the Four Seasons Hotel. The name of the restaurant is Bayou and Bottle. As a matter of fact, Richard's got so many restaurants and trophies, we can't list them all. It's only a one-hour show. Thanks for your time, Richard. Let's talk again real soon, okay?
Thanks for having me. Good talking to you. Take care.
Stay patient. Dinner will be ready right after the smoke alarm goes off. The Outdoor Cooking Show will be back with more smoking hot tips for you and your old flame after this short break.
Nothing beats farm fresh produce. Roadside stands are great, but not always well stocked. But Froberg's Farm on Highway 6 in Alvin always has produce fresh from the field. You can't get produce this fresh in stores. Froberg's has a spacious covered market, or you can pick your own produce if you prefer. This time of year is great for cabbage, cauliflower, collard and mustard greens, turnips, radishes, rutabagas, kumquats, even Brussels sprouts, and a whole lot more. Fruits, vegetables, jams, jellies, pickles, and a huge selection of dried beans and peas. And Froberg's Farm is famous for its pies, both traditional homemade or fried pies, with over 20 different flavors. Order in advance, and Froberg's can have as many as you need ready for pickup. And be sure you visit Greek Smokehouse right next door while you're there. Froberg's Farm, only 8 miles south of 288 and 2.5 miles from Business 35 on Highway 6 in Alvin. Open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Froberg's Farm. Farm fresh produce since 1936. Headed home from the field with an ice cooler full of wild game? Drop it off at Belleville Meat Market's new processing facility and see how they've taken wild game processing and made it a front door experience. Belleville Meat Market hasn't changed the quality of their products or services for 35 years, so they're not changing because they're growing because they haven't changed. Take your wild game to Belleville Meat Market's new wild game processing plant and take the worry out of processing it into any high-quality cut of meat you want. And if you can't make it to Belleville Meat Market, be sure you check out their newly redesigned website and online store, BellevilleMeatMarket.com, offering a wide variety of their most popular pecan smoke products. But if you've got wild game, Belleville Meat Market's new processing facility will handle everything for you, and it's right next door to their landmark location. Belleville Meat Market and Wild Game Processing Center, conveniently located just 14 miles north of I-10 and 14 miles south of Highway 290 on Highway 36 in Belleville. Randy Hames is my name, but many of you know me better as half of one of Houston's most iconic early morning comedy radio shows, The Hudson and Harrigan Show. Now, I'm no longer Irv Harrigan, but I've written a book about the show that I think you'll love. Fred Olson and I hosted the show for almost 30 years, and we enjoyed unbelievable rating success and won numerous awards. But the best part was, we were just having fun. Listeners told us they laughed all the way to work every day, too, with characters such as Jim Bob Jumpback, The Story Guy, and Tyrone, plus dozens of others. Houston's morning show recreates some of those hilarious on-air moments and gives you a unique behind-the-scenes peek at even funnier off-air events. Plus, I've carefully chronicled an accurate history of the show and how it evolved. Houston's Morning Show. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or as an audiobook on iTunes. Get your copy of Houston's Morning Show today and join the fun. Randy Hames here, and my salsa has to pass the chip test. That's why I personally recommend Jake's Atomic Salsa. Jake Johnson isn't your typical middle school student. He's picky about salsa, too, so he developed his own. And it was so good, his friends asked him to sell them some, and Jake's Atomic Salsa was born. Jake's Atomic Salsa has a hearty blend of tomatoes, plus roasted poblano, serrano, jalapeno, and habanero peppers. It also includes lots of fresh lemon and lime juice to add bright notes, with no large chunks of onion or cilantro. Jake's Atomic Salsa comes in four different flavors, from mild to out-of-this-world spicy, and goes great with eggs, enchiladas, meatloaf, Bloody Marys, or just pour it over cream cheese. It's the best salsa you've ever tasted, and all the profits go to pay for Jake's college education. Check out Jake's Atomic Salsa on Facebook, and go to jakesatomicsalsa.com to order a few jars, or try the variety pack with all four flavors. I know, you'll agree with me, Jake's Atomic Salsa is the bomb.
Stand back. We've got our grill on. The Outdoor Cooking Show is brought to you by Boyd's One Stop at the Texas City Dyke. Now, here's your host, the daddy-o of the patio, Randy Hames.
Make welcome now an old friend and colleague, Dan Blanchard. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing great, Randy. How are you?
I'm good. Dan works in the radio industry, but he's not used to being on this side of the microphone, so take it easy on him, okay?
Yeah, please.
Tell us what you do, Dan.
Well, I'm a sales guy. I sell radio ad time for iHeartMedia, and I've been doing sales in Houston area for, I hate to say it, about 37 years.
Wow. Dan and I became co-workers back when I was on the Hudson and Harrigan show on a different radio station, which shall remain nameless. And he was the sales manager of the radio station we both worked at there in a former life. Had a lot of good times together, 10-man jams, Texans football games, lots of other events.
Oh, yeah.
And then there were the staff meetings. I wonder if you remember this, Dan. We had a boss, and she would take great delight in having everyone in the staff meeting sing happy birthday to anyone who showed up late. Do you remember that?
I do. I do.
It did cut down on tardiness, as I recall. You'll be interested to know, Dan, that I'm going to be visiting with our mutual friend Rowdy Yates here in the next few minutes. Anything you want me to tell him for you?
Well, first of all, just tell him hello and tell him I really enjoy his show that appears occasionally on another radio station.
So. I thought maybe he might owe you some gambling money or something like that.
No.
Dan is also a proud alum of the University of Texas.
Smoke 'em.
And that actually serves our purpose as well, because we talked to the RC Smoke 'em Cookers back during football tailgating season. Obviously, by their name, they are Aggies. So having a Longhorn on the show to balance out is a good thing. Would you care to comment on the current state of UT athletics, Dan?
Well, I will say this. It's an exciting time. How's that?
Enough said.
But I'm confident. I feel good about it.
So you think Tom Herman's going to turn around the football program?
I do. I really do.
When did you attend UT, Dan?
I was there in the early 70s and graduated after 4 years by a miracle. My degree was in radio, TV, film, so I ended up in the industry and I've remained ever since.
And what brought you to Houston?
Well, I started out kind of in television, and that was in Amarillo, and then I couldn't take the snow. And then I moved to East Texas, Nacogdoches, and worked on some graduate school courses and got to the point where I wanted to get a job. I'd heard of a station in Houston that was the big one, and came to Houston and became a salesperson there.
And that's when you and I met.
That's right.
Now, in keeping with the theme of today's show, experts, amateurs, and celebrities, Dan is going to fill the role of amateur. Now, that's not a reflection on his ability, just an indicator that he's not actually a professional chef. So let's start out by having you explain how you became interested in outdoor cooking in the first place.
Well, I've enjoyed outdoor cooking all my adult life, and because my dad used to do it. But it was one of those small smokers and things like that in the backyard. But as I grew older and had a family of my own, I started cooking a lot outside on the very basic grills with charcoal and so forth. But as time moved along, I've always loved barbecue and smoked meats. So a few years ago, for Father's Day, I was given a cooker that is relatively inexpensive at that big box store that starts with an A is where I got it. And it has a smoker box on the side and then a smoker grill for the smoking. Then there's a gas grill of the same size, and it's about an 18 by 20 inch surface grill. And then to the left of that is actually a gas range, so I can cook something on a skillet if I wanted to. But then I got brave. I said, you know, I want to learn how to smoke meats. I had done some ribs before on a small grill that was fairly successful, but I wanted to really learn how to do a brisket. It was a learning experience, let me say this to the other amateurs out there. I'd put a brisket on, and without doing the research first, but let me add, and I learned by mistakes, especially how to get it tender. That's the biggest challenge for an amateur, is to be patient. And there's some critical things that are involved. One is the time you cook it, and then the other is the temperature outside that you're cooking it at, and then the temperature inside, which I later learned has a lot of challenges about understanding what goes on with that. So to the amateurs, I would say, first of all, learn your smoker. I would recommend, you know, not spending a whole lot of money on one, because you could certainly do that, but just getting a cheap one that has a smoker box on the end and then a smoked area, you know, a cooking, like an ovenish area, that has a built-in thermometer on it, on the top, like mine does, and you can follow, you can watch the temperature.
You recently told me you just smoked a brisket and that you thought it had turned out better than anything you've ever done before.
Yep.
So tell us that story.
Well, the brisket or two before that, it didn't turn out so well. it would taste good because I would use hickory in my smoker box. Hickory's my favorite. But the thing that I learned was that I would cook a brisket to when it looked good and it had been on, let's say, 4 hours or something like that, or 5 hours, and it's relatively small. I would think, well, it's got to be ready. You know, I don't want to burn it, or I don't want it to dry out or whatever. So I would test it, and it tasted great, but it was tough, you know. And so when I did finally do some research and see what the internal temperature should be, which is about 195 degrees, I said, oh, this is easy enough. I'll just get it going, and I'll keep checking it every hour or so. So I tried it. And, you know, at about 3 hours, 3 or 4 hours, temperature got all the way up to like 150, 155 internally. And I'm thinking, oh, well, this is going to be quick. Well, then I experienced something that all amateur cookers experience that haven't researched it, and it's the big mystery. It's called the stall. And the stall drove me crazy because I didn't know what was going on. The temperature would not go up, even though I kept the cooking temperature at about 200 to 225. It would not go up for the life of me. And after about 6, 7, 8 hours, I basically gave up. You know, I just said, what I said is that I got to go to bed, you know, because it had been all afternoon. So I did something by accident that turned out to be a fantastic decision to do. And what I did was, all right, I'm going to bed. So I'm going to put the oven on inside. I know this is a bad thing to say about outdoor cooking, but I had to go to bed. And so I put the oven on, and about 250, I think it was, or 300, I can't remember exactly. And I took the brisket off, put it in a pan, and actually wrapped it in foil because I didn't want it to burn. You know, I didn't want it to dry out. And I said, okay, I'll wake up in about 3 hours in the middle of the night, and I'll go in and check it and turn it off and so forth. I think I slept about 4 hours before I got up. I went, oh, my gosh, that thing's probably, you know, ruined by now. And I went in, turned off the oven, and just left it in there. And then by the time I got up, took it out, it was cool enough to set aside, and I tested it. And, oh, my goodness, it was perfect. And what I learned was that the stall can last as long as 6 hours, which is ridiculous. But then if you keep the heat on it, even if I had kept it out on the grill and not put it in the oven, if I kept the heat on it for another maybe 2 hours, the internal temperature would rise. And after I figured out that happened, I went back and looked it up, and this is what I should have done in the first place. There's so much information on the internet about that. You could Google, you know, brisket stall, and you'll get so many different approaches of how to deal with it and how to look at it. But if I had done that in the first place, I wouldn't have panicked, you know, and all that. But the good thing about it is that the longer you're putting it on there, the deeper your smoke ring will go. You know, when you cut the brisket, you'll see that red ring around the exterior. That's the smoke ring, and the deeper that is, the better it tastes. And by the time it's tender, it's just wonderful. And the crust on the outside is really good, too. You know, it doesn't dry out. So that was my learning moment, if you will, giving up, going to bed, putting it in the oven, letting nature take its course. So
we call this perfection by accident.
Exactly.
We've been talking to an old friend and colleague for many years, Dan Blanchard of iHeartRadio in Houston, a dedicated backyard chef, an outstanding radio executive we're proud to have on the Outdoor Cooking Show. Thanks for your time, Dan, and I want to be invited to your next brisket cookout, okay?
Oh, I'd love it. That'd be great.
Life is short. Grill while you can. Randy will be back with more food and fun after this break.
Boyd's One Stop. The name says it all. If you like seafood, you'll love Boyd's, conveniently located at the base of the Texas City Dyke. Boyd's One Stop has bait, tackle, fresh seafood, and even a restaurant, all at 227 Dyke Road. If you fish Galveston Bay, Boyd's is the one and only stop for everything you need. There's a reason why they're called the live shrimp capital of Texas. But they've also got lots of finger mullet, croaker, plus fresh dead shrimp, shad, and squid. Plus, Boyd's has tackle galore, ice and ice chests, and cold drinks and snacks. Just need fresh fish for a family seafood feast? The freshest seafood, like table shrimp, live blue crab, and crawfish when in season, is in stock and ready for you at Boyd's. And if you're hungry right now, check out Boyd's Cajun Grill Express right next door, with a wide variety of breakfast, lunch, and dinner items like crawfish, oyster po' boys, and fried seafood platters. Boyd's One Stop, the name says it all, 227 Dyke Road at the base of the Texas City Dyke.
If you're in the energy industry and want to drive down costs, it's time to automate. NuStar Energy Services provides automation solutions for pipelines, independent producers, and any company in the exploration and production sector. Still sending someone out in a pickup to read the flow computer on your well? For about $1 a day, NuStar can collect all the data remotely so you can monitor everything on a customized web portal. Heck, you can't even buy a gallon of gas for a truck for $1. How about the levels on your tanks at the well site? For about $1 a day, NuStar can set up remote monitoring so you can see the level in real time and even turn pumps on or off remotely. And remember, NuStar's remote monitoring packages start at about $1 a day. So call NuStar Energy Services today and improve your bottom line. 832-917-1200. That's 832-917-1200. Or NuStarInc.com.
Nothing beats farm fresh produce. Roadside stands are great, but not always well stocked. But Froberg's Farm on Highway 6 in Alvin always has produce fresh from the field. You can't get produce this fresh in stores. Froberg's has a spacious covered market, or you can pick your own produce if you prefer. This time of year is great for cabbage, cauliflower, collard and mustard greens, turnips, radishes, rutabagas, kumquats, even Brussels sprouts, and a whole lot more. Fruits, vegetables, jams, jellies, pickles, and a huge selection of dried beans and peas. And Froberg's Farm is famous for its pies, both traditional homemade or fried pies, with over 20 different flavors. Order in advance, and Froberg's can have as many as you need ready for pickup. And be sure you visit Greek Smokehouse right next door while you're there. Froberg's Farm, only 8 miles south of 288 and 2.5 miles from Business 35 on Highway 6 in Alvin. Open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Froberg's Farm. Farm fresh produce since 1936.
Does the cell phone connectivity in your office stink? Do you routinely miss calls? Lots of buildings have dead zones, and that means garbled or dropped calls. But not anymore. Texas Cell Phone Boosters provides FCC-approved cell phone booster systems that can make dead zones a thing of the past. These are not rinky-dink systems from big box stores. These are commercial-grade booster systems that cover tens of thousands of square feet. And Texas Cell Phone Boosters will specifically engineer and install a system in your office or warehouse. If you drive or regularly work in remote locations, Texas Cell Phone Boosters can help you boost a weak signal from a tower a long way off. So don't miss calls from potential customers any longer. Call the pros at Texas Cell Phone Boosters, 832-551-1000. That's 832-551-1000. Or go to texascellphoneboosters.com.
May the forks be with you. The Outdoor Cooking Show is brought to you by Froberg's Farm on Highway 6 in Alvin. Now, here's the man who turns all the grills on, Randy Haynes.
Well, it had to happen eventually. Our paths had to cross once again. Here is a man I have literally known all his life, the indefatigable Rowdy Yates. How are you, old friend?
Good grief. I didn't realize I needed a thesaurus to get through a cooking segment on this show. But you're right. Our paths did have to cross again at some point because we share the same parole officer.
You and I have not actually seen one another since I got fired. What was it, 7 years ago from Hudson and Harrigan? But we've spoken frequently on the phone. Most listeners don't know, however, that I have literally known you since you were an infant. Shall I go ahead and tell that story and get it over with?
Yeah, you can tell the story. Sure, sure.
Rowdy's dad, Big Joe, was the news director at a radio station where I worked several decades ago in Dallas-Fort Worth. And when Rowdy was born, Joe brought Rowdy up to the station to show him off. So I literally held Rowdy as a baby. And if I recall correctly, you pooped on me.
Oh, come on. I don't remember that part, but how could I?
At least you didn't hesitate to let me know what you thought of me right off the bat.
Well, that's true. And you know what? The feelings really haven't changed that much in 47 years, I'll tell you that much. But, you know, I will say this. I do recall when I came to Houston, I took the job and I introduced myself and you looked at me and you said, "My gosh, the last time I saw you, I held you." I was thinking, boy, it's been a number of years because you wouldn't be able to do that now without sustaining a horrific hernia, which I believe you had.
That's true, I did. And by the way, folks, when Rowdy was born, he was 4'3" tall.
Right, yeah, weighed in at 712 pounds.
And that sets up the fact that you literally grew up in the radio business with your dad, Big Joe.
Yep.
Went to A&M, eventually wound up here in Houston at another radio station, which shall remain nameless. I was Irv Harrigan for 30 years, so our paths inevitably crossed again. But at least you haven't pooped on me again.
Well, that's true. It was actually the opposite when you think about it. They kind of pooped on all of us. That really was. That was a very great long run for you guys, especially.
It was.
And then, of course, I was there for 15 years and a little more before they finally made me my offer that I couldn't accept and went ahead and decided to get on down the road. And I'd say I don't know that I will ever be a part of something like that again. I pray to God I will someday. I just don't know if that'll ever happen, but at least I got to do it.
I also recall the several different events that you and I hosted together, like 10-man jams and rodeo events, but I especially remember a flight to Memphis for a St. Jude Children's Research Hospital Radiothon seminar.
I told this story. Listen, I told this story to somebody yesterday.
It was a smaller commuter-type plane. Rowdy does not like to fly, and we encountered some turbulence, and you were more than just a little bit unsettled with the bumpy ride, and I remember I kind of got you through it.
Oh, yeah. Well, first off, let me back up and say that I did not have any trouble with flying until I was about 32 years old. And Kim and I were coming back from a cruise. We had been in Florida, and we were chasing what amounted to be the remnants of a tropical storm.
Ah.
And you know how airlines like to stay on time. And we got caught up in the rear end of that thing, and it tossed this 737 jet around like a rag doll. And I remember the going up and the going down and the side to side and the thrashing and the motion. And you know when the flight attendant starts screaming and the drink cart hits the ceiling that you're on a less than smooth flight. And I did not fly for 2 years. And that was the first flight I had been on, and I actually like flying in those smaller Embraer jets, mainly because the seats are a little bit bigger and it gives you a little bit better leg room.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you and I were sitting next to one another, and I was probably sweating and shaking, and I remember that you put your hand on my arm, and you're like, "It's going to be okay." But I did. I just told that story to someone yesterday. It was a horrible flight, and the after effects stayed with me for several days. As it took me several days to get a doctor's appointment to get that seat cushion properly extracted.
Well, on to better things here. You and Kim have a great love of good food and the process of preparing it, and so that makes you the perfect guest for the Outdoor Cooking Show. Let's start with one of the pastimes that I see you talk about on Facebook a lot, canning.
Oh, boy.
We don't really talk about this subject enough because a lot of backyard chefs really love to can. How did you and Kim get into canning?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I'd always carried a memory of this from my grandmother and my grandfather. And, of course, I guess I was 40 when I really got into it. And my neighbor, Kenneth Eugene New, there on Hearthside Drive in Sugar Land, brought me to his kitchen one day and said, "I'm going to show you the absolute most simple processing way with a simple brining recipe and a simple way in which you can safely process and can this stuff. And so after I kind of got into the groove of knowing how long to expose them to the hot water after I had canned them up and the proper twisting of the lids to make sure that the air had escaped and everything else, that's when Kim got into the picture and we really started to become what I consider to be kind of artisans in this, because we're really blessed where I live now in Oklahoma. The farmers markets are just all over the place. And you really have your choice of things in which you can. And so I started looking at things that not only I thought would taste good, but also would look good too. So then you had the combining of the different vegetables and their colors that I thought really made the whole canning experience something that was, you know, appealing obviously to your appetite, but also, you know, to the eye as well. But what I learned about canning was that it was something that was very much from the heart. It was a personal gift, and it was a one-of-a-kind gift, and that it was a gift that kept on giving because it left lasting memories with the taste of whatever happened to be in that glass jar. And I've got one other story here, and I think this was the bigger purpose of this when I first got into it, and it has to do with someone that you and I knew by the name of Sherry Dollar.
Oh, yeah.
Sherry was our sales manager, and unfortunately, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. Everyone we all knows someone that's been directly impacted by this, and you know what happens a lot of times with the chemotherapy treatments is that either you lose your appetite, you lose your taste, your sense of taste, or you just can't keep anything down. The treatments just make you so sick. Well, I had given Sherry a jar of pickled okra because she, like me, shares a love of Bloody Marys. And she told me that she had been sick and for about 3 weeks on and off hadn't been able to eat or keep anything down. And she walked into the kitchen on a Sunday morning and saw the jar of okra. And she said, "I just want to taste one of these and I hope everything goes well." Well, she ate a piece or two of this okra and she loved it. And it didn't make her sick. And so she told me that on Monday morning, and that following weekend, I assembled a handful of my friends there in my kitchen in Sugar Land, and we kind of set up this amateur processing plant. And we went to the grocery store, and we went to a farmer's market in between Rosenberg and Orchard, and we spent an entire day just jarring and canning up anything and everything we thought she might enjoy. And that was kind of the higher purpose and how we, you know, realized that what we were doing was not only fun, but could also be beneficial to people that were sick. And, you know, since then, I have done that, you know, and when Kim was diagnosed with breast cancer, naturally, we ran into other people that were kind of running into the same problems. And I was like, you know what, let me just show you Dr. Rowdy's cure-all. Try this and see if this helps. And 9 times out of 10, that happened to be something that they could eat. I cannot explain why. I'm sure that there's a chemist out there that probably could, but there's something in that processing that helps to alleviate part of that problem.
Well, you know, I never intended for this segment to be strictly about canning, but get two disc jockeys together and
yeah,
that's what happens. But I think this is just absolutely fascinating. But my friend, you must come back on this show and talk about making salsa and cooking out on the patio and all those other things. So will you come back?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, I will talk about salsa next time around because that's actually the thing that I have gotten into as of late. That's unbelievably easy to do. You can actually sidestep part of the processing process when it comes to the canning. And again, unbelievably cheap and delicious and simple.
My lifelong friend, Rowdy Yates, who at least hasn't pooped on me lately.
No, I have not.
Love to Kim, and let's do this again real soon. Okay, buddy?
All right, we'll talk to you. Thank you, Randy.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of the Outdoor Cooking Show. Send us your burning questions and favorite recipes in a private message on our Facebook page, The Outdoor Cooking Show, or visit our website, theoutdoorcookingshow.com. Join us next week for more tasty food and fun over a red-hot grill on The Outdoor Cooking Show.
How's about cooking something else?